Mr. Stockman, we've been following your budgets for some years now. You were on this broadcast almost exactly a year ago, and I'm just fascinated looking at this new budget at the size of the deficits which you are proposing. How do you account, after all these years of work, all these things that you've gotten passed by Congress, how do you account for these enormous deficits which you are proposing?
Well, we've had some major unanticipated developments in the economy. The recession was much deeper and longer than we expected. The inflation rate fell much more dramatically and rapidly than anybody anticipated last year, or certainly 2 years ago. This has had a profound impact on the budget. Revenues are far below what we originally thought. Debt service has increased enormously, and we still haven't gotten all of the spending programs under control.
But you're proposing enormous deficits for the healthy recovery years ahead.
Well, we have to look at those in terms of the direction of the deficit path and the size of the deficit relative to the economy. We think that they're coming down steadily by the out years, less than 3%, 2% of GNP. That should permit a strong recovery to continue. If we can do more, so much the better. But what we've defined in this budget plan, over $500 billion in deficit reduction over 5 years, is the minimum required to make sure we stay on a recovery path for the economy.
From CBS News, Washington, Face the Nation on the CBS Radio Network. A spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with David Stockman, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Stockman will be questioned by CBS News Special Correspondent Jane Bryant Quinn, by Hobart Rowan, economics columnist for The Washington Post, and by the moderator, CBS News Correspondent George Herman. We shall resume the interview in a moment. But first, here is George Herman.
David Allen Stockman was born November 10, 1946, which makes him 36 years old. He was the youngest man in over 100 years to serve in a president's cabinet. Stockman was born in Camp Hood, Texas, where his father was getting ready to muster out of the United States Army. The family quickly returned to their fruit farm in St. Joseph, Michigan, a farm which had belonged to Stockman's mother's family since the 1890s. David was the oldest child, and as time went by, he was drafted into helping with the chores around the farm, including taking care of the other four children. His mother says that from an early age on, he always studied hard and read everything he could find to read. He was president of the student council, an honors student. Young Stockman worked for Barry Goldwater's presidential campaign in 1964. Then he went off to Michigan State University, and suddenly he became an activist leader of protests against the war in Vietnam and a campus radical who championed draft avoidance. He was put on the list of students to be kept under surveillance by the State Police of Michigan. Stockman went from Michigan to the Harvard Divinity School. There he quickly fell under the sway of Harvard's neoconservative group. He became a boarder and a babysitter for Professor, now Senator, Moynihan. Congressman John Anderson gave Stockman a job on the Hill, and in 1975, Stockman went home to Michigan and won himself a Republican seat in the House. President Reagan took him out of Congress, and for a while, Budget Director Stockman was about the most visible member of the Reagan administration. An unfortunate interview published in the Atlantic Monthly contained a number of quotes showing that Stockman didn't fully believe in supply-side economics and even had doubts about some of his own budget figures. And since then, he has worked almost entirely behind the scenes in the Reagan administration. Longtime bachelor Stockman is about to get himself married and, some think, about to leave the government in Washington.
We continue now with Face the Nation.
Well, Mr. Stockman, I have to confess that your second answer went by me perhaps too fast for my mind, and I didn't really understand it. Would you explain to a non-economist like me why the deficit for the out years, the years beyond this recession, the years when the economy is, by your projections, going to be returning to a healthy state and growing each year, why they are so enormous, even with new taxes?
Well, I think there are three reasons. One, we inherited a budget that was badly out of balance. Domestic spending had increased by nearly 50% in real terms over the previous decade relative to the economy, from 10 to 16% of GNP. Secondly, it was recognized by all in 1981 that substantial increases in defense funding were necessary to take care of the deplorable conditions that we inherited, whether it was pay, readiness, modernization of our conventional systems, or the strategic imbalance. So those two factors gave us a large imbalance in the budget that we had to whittle down. Then another factor entered in, which was a economy that instead of smoothly moving from high inflation and low growth to the opposite, went through a period of 2 years of very costly, disruptive transition. And we had a much deeper recession than we thought. The inflation rate fell much more rapidly than any economist predicted early on. This has changed the revenue outlook for the future drastically, probably 100, 150 billion lower revenues in the future because of this two-year transition in the economy that we've gone through. Thirdly, we've made enormous progress in Congress over 2 years in reducing this huge imbalance in domestic spending that we inherited. But frankly, it has not come down nearly as rapidly as we planned, nor do I think it can for the future, even with the efforts that we've had, we propose in this budget. So if you put all those factors together, you have a huge imbalance in the budget for the out years that'll take extraordinary measures in cooperation among all parties in the process, the Congress, the executive branch, both parties, to close this gap enough so that we can assure a continued economic recovery, get people back to work, and look forward to a better economic situation in the future.
Mr. Stockman, it strikes me as a little bit strange in answering Mr. Herman and explaining the deficit and the reasons for it that you fail to mention at any point the possible impact of the Reagan economic program. There are many analysts who suggest that the reason you have the recession, which is creating the deficits, is that at the start you had an enormous tax cut, a buildup of the defense program, and you not only encountered but you encouraged a monetary policy that ran interest rates up into the kind of levels we have now. So do you want us to believe that the Reagan administration doesn't have any responsibility for the situation we're in?
Well, if I could respond to that, I would say I don't believe the defense buildup that was required for national security has had any impact on the recession, nor do I believe the tax cut can be held responsible. But clearly, the monetary restraint that was unavoidable, given a double-digit rate of inflation and almost a hyperinflationary disorder in the economy in 1981, did contribute to the recession and did have an impact on this very difficult two-year transition that we've gone through. The main thing, though, is that it was probably unavoidable. We had gone through 10 years of rising inflation, the largest peacetime inflation in history, and the cost of correcting that, of reversing the direction, of getting the financial and economic system back in balance has been enormous and regrettable, but I think unavoidable.
As far as the size of the deficit is concerned, however, you simply have not answered the question about the size of the tax cut. You discussed how there was a big revenue imbalance here, and the Reagan administration has put forth an enormous tax cut that has helped reduce revenues below the level of spending we have.
Well, that is true only relative to the tax increase built into prior law before 1981. If you'll examine our budget proposal carefully, you will see that with the standby tax we proposed for the out years, that taxes as a share of GNP will be about 20.5%. That is only marginally lower than they were in 1981. So in terms of the revenue structure that existed at the time, there is not a large change on net. Relative to the built-in bracket creep and escalation of the tax burden prior to our reform of the tax law, there is a major change, but that is necessary. If the Congress wants to spend more money, wants to have a bigger government, then it seems to me that there ought to be a debate and a vote on what type of taxes ought to be imposed for what purposes.
Well, our CBS News New York Times poll has shown repeatedly over the last year or more that the American people would gladly give up the third year of the tax cut if it would help reduce the deficit. Now, I don't know whether you want to call that a tax increase or what you want to call it, but that's one that seems to have great public support.
Well, the polls show a lot of things, but I believe if you look at the debate as it presently exists and you find that people all the way from Jack Kemp on one side to Walter Heller on the other say that the third year cut scheduled for July will be helpful in stimulating and reinforcing the recovery, and that it shouldn't be tampered with, it seems to me we should leave well enough alone and look down the road towards the out years after the recovery is well underway to determine what needs to be done.
But one tax thing that does come pass in the out years is the indexation, which is scheduled to start in 1985, which will also shorten somewhat the revenues you can expect in those years?
Well, not really. Indexation is probably the most important permanent tax reform that we've adopted. And it essentially says that if we're going to need more revenue because we have requirements for defense or because the country or the Congress believes that domestic spending must be maintained at a level in excess of what we can pay for, then we ought to have an explicit vote on that. Raise the taxes to pay for the spending. If we repeal indexing, we revert to the old practice of inflating the tax burden through the back door of hidden tax
increases. Inflation is inflating the costs at the same rate. How do you keep up if you inflate one side automatically and not the other side?
Well, I would disagree with that entirely. Inflation works to put people in higher tax brackets because of our progressive income tax structure. That's a real increase in the tax burden. On the other hand, when we index Social Security benefits, we're not raising someone's benefit level. We are simply maintaining the purchasing power over time based on the year-to-year inflation
but
in the economy.
You're increasing the outflow. You're increasing the spending, the outlays of the federal government.
No, that's not correct.
Mr. Talkman, you're a realist, and I know you've been up on the Hill this past week, and the sentiment up there is, you no doubt have sensed even more acutely than we have, is that Congress doesn't like the standby tax increase proposal. Senator Dole has all but said that it's dead. Now, if it is as important as you said in your opening remarks that you do this as a minimum program, what do you propose to do instead of the standby tax if that doesn't go through? Where are you going to find the revenues?
Well, I think it's too early to speculate on that. The budget has been on the Hill less than a week.
But it's already
the members
shot
of Congress
down
and their staffs have been busy with their microscopes attempting to find areas that they disagree with, but I don't see any sense yet that an alternative strategy or an alternative set of basic proposals has emerged. So obviously we believe this is the best mechanism to deal with the circumstances.
You're not preparing any fallback position in case the standby tax doesn't go through?
Well, we wouldn't be discussing them here.
Mr. Stockman, on the question of the defense buildup, you've said previously that we're just putting it back to where it would be in 1970. But in 1970, this country was at war in Vietnam. Why should we have a defense buildup in peacetime that equals or exceeds what we had when we were at war?
Well, let's go back to 1963. That was before the Vietnam War expenditure started. The defense budget that we're proposing for 84 is a smaller fraction of GNP, 7%, than the 9% we spent then. In the interim, there's been this huge increase in the whole range of our domestic programs. I've said before, and I'll say again, our 84 budget represents a 5% increase in defense spending relative to what we could afford as a nation in 1970. It represents a 95% increase in domestic spending relative to what we thought we needed in 1970.
One of the classic mistakes always attributed to President Johnson is that he would not tax the people to pay for the military buildup in Vietnam, and he would not tax the people to pay for the buildup in Social Security, in the social spending. Isn't this administration doing the same thing?
No,
you're not raising taxes
so.
To cover the spending.
I don't believe so, because what I've heard on the Hill all week is that we're not doing anything about taxes and we're not doing anything about defense. In this $558 billion deficit reduction package we proposed for 5 years. Well, the truth of the matter, that package contains $280 billion worth of proposed revenue increases, including the standby, and defense reductions over the 5 years. That's 50% of the package.
But it's not enough. It's not enough to bring the budget into balance, even when the economy is running well, as you expect it to be in 2 or 3 years. You have not been able to do that.
Well, it would be desirable if we could get it in balance in 86 or 88, but there are a whole range of things that have to be weighed and have to be reconciled.
You were once, incidentally, a supporter of the balanced budget amendment.
When we assess the circumstances that we're in, the discipline of a balanced budget amendment would be helpful. We're not in those circumstances now. We are threatened by huge out-year deficits that will abort the recovery if not corrected. This plan doesn't correct 100% of that out-year problem, but it corrects a good part of it and enough of it in order to provide some signal, some confidence to the financial markets that we mean to get it under control
when
with real measures.
When do you expect that the recovery might be aborted in line of all the deficits?
Well, I don't know that anyone has any crystal ball that can pinpoint the month or quarter, but it's fairly clear that after a year or two, this economy will need huge sums of additional capital to modernize our plants, to improve our technology, and we can't tolerate a circumstance in which the federal government is absorbing all of it to pay for its deficit.
Let me bring you back to the defense program, because it seems to be so critical in the whole budget and in the congressional attitude. Senator Domenici said on another broadcast yesterday that your defense spending figures for 1985 and 86 will have to be cut down so that the program isn't growing so fast. He also said flatly that the president will agree to figures lower than the ones that are in the budget. So let me ask you, is there a compromise in the works? Have you had discussions with Senator Domenici and others that will lead possibly to lower defense figures?
Well, when you're faced with very tough choices in the budget, whether it's freezing the COLAs as we have proposed or reforming some other domestic programs, it's always easy to point to revenues or defense and say that's where we'll solve the problem. But I think the people on Capitol Hill have to remember this 84 budget request is about at the ceiling that they imposed for 84 last year. And then they felt last year that that was the minimum we could spend for defense.
But things have changed since last year, as you yourself just said. Things have gone not so well.
It may be that the economy has changed, the deficit projections have changed, but the threats that we face internationally and the requirements to meet them have not changed at all.
Well, when Defense Secretary Weinberger agreed to go back and give representative places where the budget could be cut further if necessary, wasn't he in fact beginning the process of rewriting a budget that's only about 1 week old?
No, I don't think so. He was trying to be responsive to the committee. They obviously are entitled to the facts. They can look at these various areas of the defense budget and make judgments and proposals. And I've said in hearings, if they can find some place where they believe savings can legitimately be made, I think people listen. But we don't think they will, and we're willing to provide them the information so that they can come to the same conclusion.
Well, Senator Domenici then was not right yesterday when he said the president will accept lower figures.
Well, I don't think, I think it's too early to say what will or won't be accepted. I think what we need is a package that can move the deficit on a steadily declining path, and the outlines, the structure of it, I believe, will not be much different.
He said something earlier, Mr.
Than what we've proposed.
He said something earlier about bringing the budget down that has stuck in my mind. I'd like to bring it back to you now. You said that domestic spending hasn't come down as projected, nor, you said, do I think it can. Are you getting with domestic spending to the point where you're bumping up against what the American people want for their poor, their elderly, and so forth, things that you cannot really, politically or in America's idea of what it wants to be, which you cannot further reduce?
Well, I think there's some element of that. I think there's some element of the practicalities of the legislative process. I think if you look at the $500 billion that we have in this budget that's being criticized for domestic programs, and that's the truth, $500 billion, and you hear the criticisms, what people on the Hill are really saying is that here and there we disagree with the priorities, but in the aggregate we could probably do with less. The problem is the Congress isn't capable of making decisions in the aggregate that result in less because of the way it's organized.
Well, I'm not sure
and so
it's
forth.
Fair, Mr. Stockman, to blame it all on the Congress. When you get to questions of should we cut Social Security's cost of living adjustments, or as you call them, COLAs, should we reduce Medicare and so forth, this isn't just the Congress. The American people are troubled by
these questions. Well, I indicated there were that my statement reflected some of both elements. The bipartisan solution on Social Security, for instance, indicated that, yes, in the last 4 years, cost of living adjustments have been 50%, wages have gone up 38%. We can have a six-month delay. The Speaker has agreed that will save $25 billion over several years. On the other hand, it was also felt as a part of a consensus process that no abrupt reduction in benefits ought to be imposed in that big system.
Well, I come back to your statement that the domestic budget has not come down as projected, nor do I think it can. Can one gather from that that you
I think it can come down, but perhaps not as far or as fast as was originally projected.
Let me ask you about the bipartisan solution to Social Security that you just mentioned. They have not solved the long-term problem. They've just apparently scraped up enough money to get us by the next few years, and then Social Security is in trouble again. The thing they couldn't solve is whether to raise the retirement age or to raise taxes to take care of people over the long term. Which would this administration support?
Well, I think our clear priority has to be on the short term. We must maintain the solvency of that system. We must provide means to pay 36 million checks beginning July 1. Now, it is not fair to say we haven't solved the long-term problem. Given our inability to predict the economy for 1 year, and that should be evident after the experience that we've gone through, I don't believe it is very sensible to worry about the last dollar of savings needed
itself
to close a deficit for 75 years.
The commission.
But I do note that 70% of what is felt to be the consensus definition of the long-term problem is dealt with in this package. We would have liked to do more, but it seems to me if we at least get that part of it legislated, we will reduce the burden on future Congresses to grapple with this problem.
So you are not prepared then to deal with a longer-term problem, even though the Commission says that the Social Security will run out of money again.
I have to disagree with that strongly. This package does deal with a longer-term problem.
It says it will run out of money in the early 1990s, is what this Commission package says. And that's only 7 or 8 short years away.
No, the package does not say that at all.
Mr. Stockman, the Congress is putting great pressure on the administration to do something more and something better on the job side. How far are you prepared to go to meet this strong demand from Congress, which originates, of course, with the rather high level of unemployment of the country?
Well, I think we've gone a long way already, and that part seems to be forgotten in the debate. With the big increase last fall in the user fee for airports and for highways and mass transit, we have in this budget $35 billion for public infrastructure, highways, mass transit, airports, waste treatment. That is 33% more than we had in 1982. That represents about 250,000 jobs. So there's been a major start. Now, beyond that, the best thing we can do to put people back to work is achieve at least the modest recovery that we've proposed in this budget. We will have 1.6 million more people to work next fall than right now if we get a 4% recovery, nearly 5 million more jobs by the fall of 1984.
But that's if you get the recovery. What people are talking about is something specific that will handle the growing unemployment, particularly the extended unemployment that is getting larger.
Well, we have indicated that we're going to take a second hard look at the budget in terms of construction programs, repair and renovation efforts that are already scheduled over several years in agencies like Veterans Administration or GSA or the Interior Department of the Park Service, to see whether some of that might be accelerated, authorized in 1982-83.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to. In dollars, how much you now
would
add? Well,
I don't think that we're at this point going to put a dollar figure on it, but I think it's well known that we're looking at what might be done in that area. But I want to note very clearly that this would not increase the budget. It's a matter of timing, getting it into the economy now rather than later, to produce investments, new VA hospitals or renovated VA hospitals that we need. It is very distinctly different than simply creating an emergency $5 billion public jobs bill that is not thought through, that does not provide public investment that we need.
Let me ask you about another number.
It does no lasting good for the economy.
Let me ask you about another number, Mr. Stockman. Unemployment rate came down last month a notch. You now thinking perhaps in working your projections about what's going to happen and payments out, are you now thinking in terms of a slightly lower unemployment figure for this current year and for next year?
Well, we would certainly like to see that, and we were very heartened by the results from January. But I think we will continue to base our budget projections on a cautious outlook, and if the economy does indeed perform better than expected, and that seems to be a growing possibility, we'll be better off. But remember, we're starting with very huge deficits. And if they can come down 10 or 20 billion a year because we get a better performance in the economy, so much the better. But we still have a huge problem.
But on unemployment, do you think this 1 month might be a fluke, or are you expecting it to begin?
No, I think the underlying evidence, the average hours or work week in the manufacturing sector was up. The number of people employed in business payroll establishments was up. So there's a lot of underlying evidence behind that unemployment number, which suggests that things have turned and that the employment picture will be steadily improving despite some fluctuation that you would ordinarily
expect.
But
you still are showing something close to 10% employment in 1984 when the Republicans in Congress and Senate will be up for re-election next year. You will be showing at that time that real interest rates are still high. You'll still have high budget deficits. Do you think that the program, as you project it, shows a tough time for the Republicans in 84?
No, I don't think so, because we'll be showing about 8% interest rates compared to 16 or 17 when we came in. We'll be showing 5 million more jobs than we have now by the fall of 1984. and we'll be showing an inflation rate at 4 or 5% rather than triple digits. I think if all of those things materialize, it would be judged enormous economic progress.
Mr. Stockman, is this your last budget?
I think that this is going to be a long and tough budget, and I'm going to focus on this one.
Okay. Thank you very much for being our guest today on Face the Nation.